From retro myths to modern day masterpieces, we'll be breaking down the universe's most pondered gaming questions. Join us as we journey through our childhood memories. We'll be diving into what it meant to us growing up through the dawn of the internet. The Cake is a Lie podcast with your hosts, Gareth and Jamie.
Welcome on into episode 13. Today we're discussing Splinter Cell, the game which redefined the stealth genre. Hot on the tails of our previous episode, Metal Gear Solid 1, which also redefined the stealth genre. But I think these games are very, very different, and I think we're going to get into that in a little while. But Jamie, before we start into things, I'm going to read out a couple of listener submissions just to kind of get the juices flowing, just to feel things out. Let us know if you like this format or if you rather that they are like all at the end and maybe we'll mix it up, who knows. But the first submission we have comes from Tane. I don't know how to pronounce this. Please let me know in the Discord if I'm pronouncing it correctly. He says, Splinter Cell. Oh man, what a run of games is that. Just an iconic series with such a tragic ending. I remember getting the PS2 version first in 2003, as I didn't own an original Xbox until 2005, when I got it secondhand at a boot sale for a nice price. The amount of hours I spent crawling, climbing, lurking in the shadows, the difficult choice of knocking out the guard or just passing them unnoticed, an absolute gem of a game. And if I'm not mistaken, Ubisoft Toronto has been doing a remake in the Snowdrop engine they use for the other Tom Clancy games. Be nice to have this amazing stealth series back. We just talked about this off stream. So there is a remake. There's not like much details about it, but it is listed on like Instant Gaming and a few other websites already for pre-order. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see that franchise come back. And I think we're going to get into this a little bit later, but there was some differences between the PS2 version and the Xbox version. So it's interesting that you had one and then got the other a bit later. To continue on, Dinner Dog says, too modern for me, but looking forward to the episode. I'm going to have just a little response to this off topic. We are going to be diving much more into retro games, going back now to early PS1 and even Sega NES period for the next few episodes. So you're in for a treat, Dinner Dog. So stay tuned. Tell me, Jamie, what was your first experience with Splinter Cell?
Well, it was the whole sole reason why I went and buying myself an Xbox.
It was the first game you got, wasn't it?
It was the very first game I got on Xbox. So it was a game I was kind of following or tracking any news, any information on it. And it was the first Xbox exclusive. And therefore, I had to get it. So it had to be mine. So I bought the Xbox. And yeah, it was the very first title that I bought.
Okay, so it did come out a year later on GameCube and PS2, but it was restricted with levels, I think. So there was bonus levels with the PC and Xbox version, and then the PS2 and GameCube had less levels and a different starting, I think.
You think?
I think.
Did you know that it wasn't actually intended initially, like prior to development, it wasn't even going to be Splinter Cell?
Yeah, so it was going to be this sci-fi game called The Drift. I think
the
it
Drift,
was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was going to be that he had this gun that had loads of attachments and like made him do different skills. But this was in development from Red Storm Entertainment. So this is Tom Clancy's company that he started to make games about his books. And going like way back, he had like a ton, like way, 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 way back, like direct names of his books just brought to games on like, you know, the ColecoVision and all these older games. But the first major one was Rainbow Six, right? So this was the first major series that he made. Yeah, Rainbow Six. This was the first one that people would know as a franchise today. So this was like the start of him making a franchise. Then he made two more franchises, one of which we're talking about today, Splinter Cell. And the other one was Ghost Recon. And these two franchises were the first two franchises that were not based on any of his books, but were made by his company.
I didn't realize that.
So, because I went to read the Splinter Cell books, because I read a lot as well. And there is Splinter Cell books, but I was like, I want, like, you know, the original Splinter Cell book, because they all came out after the game, basically. Cool. And I found that there was no original. The game was the original. Yeah. And then, obviously, Red Storm Entertainment was bought by Ubisoft. And then it's unclear then after that how much involvement Tom Clancy actually had with the actual design of the games. But one, I know one, like, this was supposed to be this Drift sci-fi game, but I do know that it was also then kind of scrapped. And then soon after this, it was like pushed as a James Bond game because of the badges, the gadgets and the like stealth and all
the,
of this.
The badges.
The badges. And this was kind of scrapped as well. People were not too keen on this. And so they tried to, I think, like, Red Storm Entertainment weren't going to do it, but they tried to push this to, like, the James Bond studio, whoever was involved, to take it over and make it a James Bond game. It didn't happen in the end. And then they came up with this whole Splinter Cell genre, which was kind of, if you think about it now, it's very close to that whole James Bond thing, because James Bond has, like, the license to kill and all of this kind of stuff. And I think in Splinter Cell, there is also, like, a license to kill codename thing.
Yeah, it's called the Fifth Freedom.
The Fifth Freedom, and this is his license to kill. So there's a lot of throw back and forth between that and James Bond, basically. In the sci-fi game, Sam Fisher was originally going to be called Buster.
Could you imagine? Yeah, which I read that, actually.
Would have somehow changed the coolness of people.
Okay, Buster.
Another great game which went under the radar by Tom Clancy also was Some of All Fears. So this was the movie based on the book, and then they made a game based on the movie. And I always put this down to, like, a bit of a throwaway movie adaptation game that was kind of rubbish because, you know, Some of All Fears, yeah, it wasn't a big, like, popular kids movie or anything. Apparently very, very good. Apparently, like, really worth playing, like, phenomenal game.
But all right, we'll have to look it up.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out for sure. So, yeah, tell me now, you wanted to get Splinter Cell based on it being the console exclusive on the Xbox, right? But what built the hype for you around this? Because for me, it was Metal Gear Solid, and this was, like, the same kind of avenue. Or at least that's the way I perceived it ahead of it being released.
Yeah, I think, like, my main drive to get it to get it is just because it's a stealth genre. I love stealth games. It's just, I think there's always that kind of, you know, sneaking element and trying to do stuff kind of, but not so much by the book, but trying to navigate through missions without being detected, or, like, gadgets obviously being a big thing. But it was just, like, I remember kind of, like, watching kind of demos or trailers for it and just seeing, like, the iconic three ocular, you know, night vision goggles.
Yes, yes.
Or interrogating people, or the fact that you'd just be enveloped in shadow. And it was just kind of like, oh, this is so class. Just, there was just nothing really like it.
It was an interesting thing about the goggles. Like, so when they were designing the goggles, Tom Clancy didn't like them because they weren't real. So in reality, you can't have heat vision and night vision in the same goggles because the technology didn't, or at the time, at least, maybe you can now. And they tried it without, and then it wouldn't really work because Sam had to literally take off his goggles and change them, and it was too much of a pause every time. So they convinced him to do it against his best wishes. But it just shows how much love Clancy had for it, that he wanted it to be so authentic that he wasn't willing to have, like, the goggles integrated and make something up, basically.
Thank God he did, because, like, yeah. I mean, even I think, like, and even kind of replaying the first one there lately, like, all right, I've dipped in and out of the first one on the Xbox, and as I was playing through it, I was like shocked at how difficult it actually is. I was like, have I become a simpleton?
You know what I found, right? So let's just talk about the start of the game, right? So you dive in and you have what I would describe as a mix between the assault course in Call of Duty Modern Warfare on the 360 and Lara Croft's mansion assault course. It's kind of like a blend of these two things, because you have some like real mobile things and you have also some like stealthy parts. And there's a couple of things. First of all, probably one of the best training levels outside of Titanfall 2 in any game, I would say, because it's done in an interesting way. So most training, as we talked about before, becomes very stale because it's kind of hand-holding and it's like, go to this ledge and press X, or go to here and press Y. And in Splinter Cell, first of all, you get a chance to try everything before it tells you, because most of the time you have to go to like the switch on the side and hit the switch, and then the prompt will come up of what you have to do. So you get a chance to do it. Secondly, it's kind of like The training is kind of, I don't know how to describe this, but it's almost like real world training. Like you think of, oh, you have to move silently. And it's not just like, you know, press six and then you can move silently. You know, it's like you have to basically barely push the analog and walk over broken glass. And like you're trying to avoid chains hanging from the ceiling and not like bump into them to stay quiet.
Yeah.
And there's no clear like black and white. Oh, yeah, you press this and now you're safe and you do the tutorial. It's very engaging, I would say.
And like, have you played it on the PC yet?
No, I have not.
All right. To be honest, it's a game that you should really use a controller with. Even when you're kind of picking locks, you know, the fact that you kind of use the tumblers on the controller the analogs to rotate the tumblers and the lock. Like on the PC, it's WASD. So you're just hitting a corresponding key. So it just doesn't feel like you're picking locks.
Yeah.
As well as like the controls actually are quite nice on the PC. They're quite fluid. But like obviously you're pressing, you know, W or S to move forward and backward.
Mm-hmm.
But that puts you into like a run. So how did they introduce kind of the really sneaky, crawly kind of element? So you have to like mouse wheel up and down to control your speed. Which is weird.
Oh, I don't know if I'd like that.
And you can't use a controller with it. So the only kind of, I suppose, trade-off why I play it on the PC is the fact that you don't have the quick save or the checkpoint save.
Yeah.
So you can save at any point on the PC.
I think for me, the ultimate would probably be to play it on an emulator so that you have the controller support. Play it on the Xbox emulator and then you have the controller support plus you have save state that you can save anytime then. Because I think like touching on the save aspect, I think it's really cool when you have the time, you know? Like when you're a kid and you're playing these games, you have infinite time. So when I was a kid playing this and I had no job or anything and I was just playing nonstop, this was like a fantastic game because I got so many hours out of it because you could just keep replaying and replaying and then getting better and better and better. Now I feel like I said the other day, I played it and I like died a couple of times. And then I was like, I don't want to go through like this whole level again now just to like accidentally fall off a ledge and kill myself or something, you know.
It constantly happens.
Yeah. I do have a few complaints about the control system on the Xbox, right? The first thing is you jump up and grab a pipe or a ledge, right? So let's say a ledge. You jump up and you grab a ledge and you press Y, which is like the top button on the controller. And you jump up. Makes perfect sense. It's jumping a lot of games, right? Then to climb up on the ledge, you push forward, right? And if you press Y, you jump off again. Which is kind of annoying. It's counterintuitive because I would think Y to jump up and then Y to get up over the ledge, right? That's just my thinking. I don't know why.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you jump on a pipe to climb on a pipe, and you want to swing yourself up to put your feet also on the pipe. So you're like kind of monkeying across. You press B, which is crouch, which kind of makes sense because you're making yourself smaller, but it's like the opposite of what is in your head.
You constantly hit Y and then you end up dropping off.
Yeah. So at the start, like I died a lot because I was basically, when I started, a couple of things happened, right? I did the training mission and I finished the training mission and then I turned off the game and then I came back and I forgot to save, obviously. And when I came back in, then there was like four missions showing. So there was the training and three missions. And I was like, oh yeah, I'll just skip the training and I'll go to the first mission, you know? So I clicked the first mission and it was like Uselka or something like this. And wait, what was the name of it? I'll tell you now. It was the
Kola Cell.
Veselka Infiltration, Kola Peninsula in Russia, right? It was like the first mission. And I was like, okay, I don't remember this being the first mission, but anyway, that's fine. And it was like really fucking difficult. And I was like, this is like completely cutthroat gaming. And I was like, there's no tutorial. There's like machine gun turrets I have to sneak past. There's like three dogs in the area. There's five people. I'm like, why not give me one person first, you know? Realized then that these were the three bonus missions and the first mission had never triggered because I didn't.
How did you realize this?
Because it was fucking difficult. And then I was looking up guides on YouTube to figure out what to do in the first level. And I was like, why are they at a fucking police station in...
you're asking me then.
I was texting you. I was like, why do I not have the police station mission? And I was thinking that it was different releases, but no, it was just my stupidity. So then I started the police station mission.
Yeah.
And this was kind of interesting because this was like you're thrown into a courtyard. And this is why I both love the game or loved it as a kid and why I hate it now. Because the like what they call the golden path in gaming, right, is like the path you're supposed to take. So if you're running through a game and you're in Tomb Raider, you know, and there's a main path and then there's like this small little side path, you know that the golden path is the big main path straight ahead and that this side path might have some kind of secret or unlockable or extra loot or something like this. So you can say, okay, I'm going to take the side path and then I'll come back and I'll take the main path. And then it avoids you having to backtrack and realize, oh shit, this is the main path. Let me go back again, right? In Splinter Cell, the golden path is not very clear, right? Or any path for that matter is not very clear. Because like you start in this courtyard mission, you're like in just this little garden area and there's fencing and there's a gate. And I'm like, do I pick the lock on the gate? Do I try and climb the fence? What do I do? And there's like a very obvious ladder that leads upstairs, right? To like the roof of a building. And they were like, stay off the streets. And I was like, okay, I need to take the rooftops, was like my thinking. So climbed up the top and it kind of allows you to do everything. So I was able to get on like these two balconies opposite me. I was able to like climb the side of the balconies, like this, like the stuff for vines growing out of it. I was able to climb that and I was able to kind of do everything, but I wasn't able to figure out where to go. So when I got onto the balcony, it was like everything was like a shader and nothing was interactable. And I was like, this is kind of strange. I don't know where to go. And it was actually like a tiny hatch on the roof that you had to go over to and press A. And I was like, now it's very obvious that I would come up the ladder, walk directly straight ahead from the ladder and then go down this hatch. But it just allows you too much freedom that you have no idea what to go on. Your focus is often on something that's not even to do with the level, you know? Like my whole focus was on either getting over this fence or getting onto this balcony because they were like the two eye-catching pieces, you know, and I was trying for ages and I was like jumping down and I was like trying to shimmy over and like climbing stuff and I was like, what the fuck do I do? Completely ignoring this tiny little hatch in the corner, you know, so that was kind of annoying. Another thing that kind of hits me in modern day, this is my last one and then I'm going to stop reading, is it's a beautiful looking game, right? Like it looks amazing. The lighting is incredible and everything. Kind of ruined when you turn on the night vision.
Lighting?
Yeah, like the lighting and the graphics are, you know, it's night vision, so it's like blurred green everything.
Yeah,
game doesn't look as pretty. So it's like the game is beautiful, but like 80% of the time you have night vision on, I would say.
Yeah, but I think like...
Maybe not as much as that, but yeah.
I think their night vision's really good though. As in, I liked that the fact that everything went black and white as opposed to like green. I know it goes green in Chaos Theory. Mm-hmm. Now, like, for those that don't know, we only gripe about the save because it's a checkpoint save system. So the issue with it is you'd get through a very kind of intense sneaking part. So you'd get, you might sneak past all these guards or take out these guards only at the end of your path, you know, get spotted or a body gets found and kind of ruins your progress. Or if you die, you literally get, it reverts you right back to the start. So every time you have to navigate through this. So this is why we're kind of hating on the save system for it. Now, I think my kind of other gripe with the game, like it's not so much a gripe. Well, yeah, I suppose it is. All right. So the thing I disliked most about the game, and everyone was kind of on the same part or the same kind of way of thinking, was the fact that there was like the three strikes rule. So like you fail X amount of alarms and the mission would be failed. And that was beyond frustrating. Or even on the first mission, so the police station, like it says, yeah, don't stay on or you can't go on the streets. So if you accidentally fall off, mission over. Now they did obviously remedy that. And this is a nice little nod that they do in Pandora Tomorrow. You're in kind of like the opening mission in Pandora Tomorrow and Lambert, then you're the guy in charge basically tells you like, oh, sorry. So a nice nod in Pandora Tomorrow. So Sam starts a mission and he's like, I'm guessing it's three alarms and mission over. And he's like, this is no video game, Fisher. You know, it's just
okay,
like,
Yeah.
So no, they did. Did you play Pandora Tomorrow?
I played the first one. I played Pandora Tomorrow and I played Chaos Theory. Chaos Theory consumed my soul when that came out. I was completely addicted to it. I was replaying it. I loved it.
And just in the franchise.
Is it the best in the franchise?
Because I haven't looked up
any of this. This is just my opinion. I didn't look up like Reddit to see, you know, what the best is or what the rankings are or whatever. But in my opinion, I would say like Splinter Cell, I remember very well. Chaos Theory, I remember very well. Pandora Tomorrow is kind of a bit blurred for me. I don't know. Maybe I've like mashed it together a bit with the two.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be missing a whole lot. Like, it's actually, so Montreal or Ubisoft Montreal developed First and the Chaos Theory. Mm-hmm. And so they're like iconic. They're brilliant. But Pandora Tomorrow was developed by Ubisoft Shanghai and Milan, I think. There's a few quality of life improvements in Pandora Tomorrow. So you have one or two new abilities. So you have a combat role. So when your back is to like a doorway, you can kind of twirl from one side of the threshold to the other. It's like a combat role.
Yeah.
Which is actually, it's quite useful. It's quite handy. The other kind of nice thing was that when you pick up a body to hide it, in the first one, you always had to put a body down to open a door. Mm-hmm. This allows you to keep the person on your shoulder while you open doors, interact with them, which is really nice.
Yeah.
Other than that, the writing, the story isn't bad, but the writing for a lot of the NPCs is like really bad. It might sound way different in a different language, but whatever translated into English, it is the worst writing you'll ever hear. It's kind of like, you know, who put on that music? Music hurts my ears. That's literally the dialogue in the game. Okay. It's so cringeworthy.
It sounds like a direct translation from grammar that isn't English, basically.
It's so bad. I need to be busy now. You know, it's literally
It's like announcing what you're doing kind of thing.
It's weird.
I do remember in the first one, the story for any of them is a bit, you know, I think we discussed this just previous to recording that like the story is fine, but it's not like mind blowing, you know, it's not BioShock or something like this. It's just an espionage story. It's your classic like 90s thriller story, you know?
Yeah.
It's good. It's enjoyable. It makes it kind of like a cozy game, if that makes sense. So like it's nothing too straining. It's just like your classic. You know, your classic
it's linear in the way that I suppose you're in a mission to do a specific set of tasks and you do them.
But I do remember like one was okay, two I just don't have much memory of, to be honest, like from my childhood. I don't know why. Three, I remember playing the shit out of that like nonstop, because there was bonus content for that as well, wasn't there? There was like trials or something like this.
So the main kind of standout for Pandora was the fact that it came in multiplayer. And multiplayer, yes. I remember actually playing that. So it was like Mercs v. Spies.
Mercs v. Spies. Phenomenal. Yeah. That was cool. That was like, I remember specifically playing that. There was one level, it was like a warehouse with loads of like boxes and containers and stuff. Yeah. And the Mercs obviously could just run around and you could like sneak around upstairs. And that was like epic. I didn't play it online.
Some Mercs had flashlights and Spies had night vision.
You'd
climb in ability and you'd go in and you'd basically get nodes or to download data onto or like steal a hard drive or download to a drive. It was actually phenomenal. I think that was kind of the only saving grace. If Pandora Tomorrow didn't have it, it would just be kind of like Splinter Cell 1 2.0, as in quality of life improvements. Chaos Theory, I'm not sure, did Pandora have co-op? I don't remember.
Pandora didn't, as far as I remember. Chaos Theory did, and it was phenomenal.
Chaos Theory.
Yeah.
Chaos Theory, like, it was kind of like you said, like, kind of games, especially on the Xbox, seem to be kind of darker and grittier. And, like, Chaos Theory is no different. Like, you get a knife and you can basically murder people.
Yeah.
But the thing I really like was just, like, and it's something you don't see in any games now. So if you're kind of, I know there's one mission inside in Chaos Theory, you're kind of navigating around a military base, and there's all military tents, and you can basically use the knife to pierce, and you can hear everything. You can hear the effect, like, and I just remember you can just hear the knife piercing into the tarpaulin, and he just rips it down, or puncturing generator tanks, or it's just that kind of like the
This is kind of like typical of Tom Clancy's games, I think. This like real, because he's done the research for the books, you know. So he knows the details and the feeling. And obviously, like, if you're an espionage spy and you're trying to cut through a tent, that noise is probably like echoing for you. during yeah. that task because you're trying to be quiet, you know. So it's like, and you're like making that so obvious then is like, that's how it would be, you know. It would be that way, like, you know, when you're trying to be quiet and everything just feels 10 times louder. Than there is a couple of Easter eggs in the first training mission, right? So this is why I think it's like the best training mission. I don't know if you know this, but at the start, you can just, as soon as you start the level, he says jump the ledge, right? And like you've just started the game, so the first thing you do is just run and you jump the ledge and you're gone, right? If you turn to the right, you can go into like a storage room and you can get a lockpick, right? And then you go back to, and you haven't even learned how to use lockpicks or anything yet. You can get a lockpick and then you can go back to the main area. You can continue the level. And then at some point you can go off to the side and you can basically hack this other room with the lockpick or break into this other room with the lockpick. You get inside, there's a laptop on a desk and you read the laptop. And the laptop says that the door code is, I think it's like 5959 or 5969 or something. And you get this code and then you go further again to the training mission. And then you can actually get into the observation deck that's looking over the training course, right? And when you get in there, you just have like an office room. Then you walk into the next part and there's a woman standing there, an NPC. And this is Anna Grimm's daughter, right? And I remember we did this Easter egg when I was playing this game when I was a kid. And what I thought was that she said she was Anna Grimm's daughter, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, who's Anna Grimm? And I was like the whole game thinking, who's Anna Grimm? Because I know I'm always talking to her daughter, but who is she? And it's actually like this, you know, Norwegian name, Grimm's daughter, like D-O-T-I-T-O-R.
Don't worry. Yeah.
And it's not actually her daughter. It's because there was no subtitles in the game. So you never get written down. So it's like, who the fuck is Anna Grimm through the whole game? But yeah, you can then kill her, right? So, or not kill her, but you can knock her out. And she's the communications lead for the third Echelon, which is the Splinter Cell faction. And when you knock her out, Lambert will come on and he'll say, God damn it, Fisher, I went out on a limb to get you recruited for this. And then he'll say, what the hell are you thinking? You're fired. You're out of the agency. Game over. And then the training mission ends. So that's a cool little Easter egg, I think. That kind of goes on for quite some time throughout the training mission. So that's why I think it's one of the best training missions.
It's training that you actually need to do. It's not like beyond
basics. If you dive into game one, you're like, fuck this. Like I was at the point where obviously I played this game as a kid and then I came back and I jumped in to the training and I did the training like a month ago or something like this. And I was like, oh yeah, I'll come back to it before we do the podcast, and came back in and I was like, yeah, I can skip the training now. I had to go back and do the training again because I was like, I can't remember how to do anything. There is one other Easter egg, which is in the CIA headquarters mission. And this was like one of my favorites. You go to an office and the office is called UFO Sightings Office, right? Or UFO Sighting Reporting Office or something. And if you go inside, there is an email from FM, which is Fox Mulder from the X-Files, talking about like some episode or something like this, which is pretty cool. So yeah,
that's
I like that. Because I like all
I like when they kind of put little things in like that.
Yeah. So yeah, that was pretty cool. Tell me, going back now in modern day, how did you find playing it?
Like, it still holds up. Like, it's still fluid. Like, even the animations are really good in the first, like, throughout the series, but, like, through the first one. Like, I still think, like, the first three games in particular, like, including Pandora Tomorrow, because it was so closely followed to the first one. Like, their use of lighting is, I think, far superior than what the most current one. So Blacklist was the latest. But I just think, like, in Blacklist, like you think you're in the dark and it's just not dark, as in you can still see everything so clearly, like without night vision. And where like in the first few games, like you're enveloped in black. The same as well, like in Double Agent, as the games have kind of went on, like the first one, you only had a light meter. And I think the same for Pandora Tomorrow, you had a light meter as well. But in Chaos Theory, you get a sound and light meter, which was like the best. So obviously if you're in an area where there's music playing or there's something, some loud environmental thing going on, like that light meter kind of goes up, so you can actually make more noise than you otherwise could.
Yeah, sure, sure. You can move faster, run over things, etc. I believe in that as well. If it's raining outside, you can be really quick running around if you're outside in the rain and stuff like this, because people don't hear you because of the rain falling.
And I think that's clever gaming. You know, you're not kind of being too paced too heavily.
Yeah, sure.
Like the first game, I think, like, it still holds up. Like, the only thing is when you kind of jump in again and it's in, you know, it's PAL 60 or so, it's just square.
Yeah, but I think that only takes like a few minutes to get used to, I think. And then once you're in it, it's kind of okay, I would say.
On the PC, you can actually make it, well, they give you weird kind of resolutions, but you can make it 1600 by 1200 and it'll be widescreen. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, and I don't know why, the same with Chaos Theory. If you, before launching the game, and you set that resolution, you can actually set it to 19, or the normal 1920, or 99? What is it? 1920? 1080?
1080 by 1920? he said confidently.
When you make it 1080, if you turn the resolution to 1080 in Chaos Theory and you put on your night vision, the whole screen goes white. You can't see anything.
Okay, not ideal if you're playing a stealth game that relies heavily on night vision.
It's some bug. So if you start up the game and then change it, it'll work fine. But I think every time you load in, you'll have to change it, which is just like it's annoying. But yeah, you can get your nice widescreen. Chaos, like the games as they kind of went on, as I say, like the first one, I think it's still just so iconic. Like, I remember kind of going around around by the police station, and it's just, I remember you're kind of going through a courtyard. Is there an episode in France as well, or is the police station in France?
No, the police station is,
it's so in Georgia,
let's,
isn't
let's,
it?
Let's take the time to have a quick run through the levels. Okay, level one is the training mission where you can beat up Anna Grimm's daughter. then you have the police station, which is in this old town in Georgia. Then you have the defense ministry in Georgia. Then you have the oil refinery, which is on the coast of Georgia somewhere.
My least favorite mission.
I loved it.
I don't know why.
I just have this fascination with oil rigs. They just scare the shit out of me. And I just think like this massive hunk of metal floating. And it's just like, because it's also the headquarters. Your headquarters in Metal Gear Solid 4 or 5 is an oil rig. You know that, right?
Yeah.
So in the later games, you have like, the Phantom Pain. You have a headquarters and it's an oil rig, which I think is really cool. And there's also that game. Oh, what's it called? The one that came out recently that's on an oil rig. Wakes the Deep or something like this.
Right.
It's like a new indie game.
We'll look it up.
A horror game set in an oil rig as well, which is pretty cool. So then you have the oil refinery. It's called oil refinery. I would say it's an oil rig because an oil refinery is usually on land, but anyway. Then we have the CIA headquarters. This is the one with the little UFO sighting office Easter egg. Then we have, we're just in Langley and we're at like Kalina Tech, which is like this software production company thing. Then we're at the nuclear plant, and this was only in the PS2 version, apparently. So I don't think you would have played this. There's a level in the nuclear plant.
All right, yeah.
So this, because the PS2 and GameCube version came out like a year later.
I
think they just wanted to give some incentive that it was, you know, something different. Extra. Then you have the Chinese embassy. Then you have the abattoir, which is in Myanmar, I'm pronouncing that right. I know the name, I've never said it.
Myanmar, yeah.
So the Chinese embassy is also in Myanmar, and then you have the abattoir, which is in Myanmar. Then you go back to the Chinese embassy again, and then you have the presidential palace, which is in Georgia again. And then with the Xbox and PC versions, so we mentioned there was one exclusive for the PS2, and with the Xbox and PC versions, you had these extra levels, which is what I started playing, which are kind of like standalone things, I think. So these... It's weird because these were released, I think, as like a mission pack that you could download and buy.
And the reason for them was because there was a couple of holes in the plot, and this was tying up loose ends.
Ah, okay. Because I did wonder, because when I played it on the Xbox, on the old Xbox, like the original Xbox, if I put the game in, I don't have these levels. And then this is where the confusion came from, because I played it on the old Xbox, did the training mission, looked at it, was just a training mission. And then I went to the Xbox One X and threw in the game, and then these four missions were up. And I was like, oh, I must have played more recently or something. But these, obviously, if you put it on like the Xbox One X or the Series X, it gives you this extra DLC, obviously, for free.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of the level layout. So what was the question again? You said something at the start about the levels, and then I started naming all the levels.
Oh, no, I was just like reminiscing, so replaying the first game.
Mm-hmm.
Like as you're kind of navigating, I remember there's a part in the police station where you eventually get down. So initially you're restricted to rooftops, mm-hmm. and then that gets lifted. So you're now down on the ground. And I just remember kind of like there's a fountain in the middle. Like this minute I walked through that, it was like transported me back to when I first got the game for whatever reason. I don't know.
Weird.
It's your man's kind of his dialogue when you kind of spook him. Mm-hmm. It just brought me right back. So no, I think it's always going to be like a game for me that is just reminiscent of when I first got the Xbox. So to me, it's one of my favorites, but Chaos Theory is certainly the best of the franchise. Yeah. So that's my opinion.
So there's a couple of things when I came back to playing it that I remembered. One was the training course.
Yeah.
This was like etched into my soul because of all these Easter eggs and stuff. And in the first level, I remember very, very vividly that like I was playing this game and it was all stealthy, and I was like, oh, this is like Metal Gear Solid, you know, only like better because there's more stealth. And then you get to like the rooftop, and all of a sudden like the building across the way is on fire, and you have to like swoop in and do this rescue mission, and it turns very actiony all of a sudden, you know, because you're now kind of rushing through the building that's in flames rather than, you know, stealthy style. That's where I can see a little bit of like the James Bond influence, where it always starts very stealthy and then moves to like action, you know, and things kick off, which I always thought kind of set it apart from the likes of Metal Gear Solid and the likes of Thief, which was also like a huge inspiration, the original Thief game, which I don't know if you played. Have you played this?
I swear, hand on my heart, I picked up Thief again because it was on for $2.99 on Instant Gaming.
Oh, okay. $1.99. That's for nothing. Was that so the original or the remaster?
The newest one. It came out, I don't know when it came out actually, but I have it on the Xbox and I played it, and I don't remember it being brilliant, but I just remember, you know, the sneaking kind of getting in people's houses and stuff was kind of fun. Like I had the first one, it was either the first one or the second one I actually bought. I had it when it released. So whenever that came out, it just wouldn't run on my father's laptop.
Okay.
So I never really got to play it, but I remember like it probably ran at like 4 or 5 frames per second.
It was like me and Lego Rock Raiders, like 3 frames every 5 seconds. There is one thing we didn't really talk about, and that is the voice that makes the games.
Yes, Michael Ironside.
Michael Ironside, which is probably, going back to it, one of the most nostalgic things, because you hear that voice and you just hear a Splinter Cell. And for those who don't know, Michael Ironside is not just a voice actor, but he's an actual actor. So in all of the, I don't know if you know his other roles or where he's from.
I know he's kind of played he seems to play a lot of kind of military kind of roles.
Either like he's a military general or he's a villain. They're mainly his two roles.
What was he? Was he a villain in Batman? No,
he was indeed. Kind of, yeah. He was. So in all the Justice League cartoons, like Harley Quinn cartoons, Wonder Woman, he is Darkseid, who is like the main, you know, the Thanos of DC. He also plays like in the X-Men cartoons. I think he's like a general or something like this. The old X-Men cartoons. He's in like one of the. Yeah, you're just hearing Sam Fisher. And I think with Darkseid, it's kind of manipulated a little bit because his voice is quite like echoey and stuff. In the Top Gun movie, he plays Maverick's trainer. In Starship Troopers, he's also like one of the infantry leaders.
That's the role I had in my head.
He's also like training the troops in that. And in Total Recall with Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's Richter, who's the guy that's not the main villain, but he's the guy that's chasing him down for the main villain the whole movie, basically.
Yeah.
And he also, big one for you, I don't know if you know this, but I know you're a huge fan of the Command & Conquer games. And in the Command & Conquer Red Alert, I think, when they have like the live action scenes. Yeah, he's in that one of the commanders as well. So he's done like quite a lot of roles. And also in Highlander 2, he's General Katana, which is one of the villains in that.
I don't remember.
I don't know if you've seen that.
I remember Highlander, but I only remember like the intro music, which is Queen.
Probably he doesn't look like he does in other movies. In Richter, he looks very much like Michael Ironside. He's just like a normal dude. Mm. But I would say in something like Highlander, he looks a little bit different maybe. But yeah, so he's done a lot of like very famous roles. And I would say like that's a huge influence on the game. And which was the game where he couldn't do it again?
The most recent one, Blacklist, yeah. Cancer. And fully recovered.
Yeah, yeah.
He came back because they released kind of, was it in Ghost Recon Breakpoint? There was a Sam Fisher kind of, would you say it's a kind of like there was a character release, like a character skin, and you get to, and there was kind of like a mission for it.
Like a cameo,
and
I guess?
He came back. Yeah, I suppose. That's exactly it. So he cameoed in for a mission and he returned to the role, so he reprised it. I would like to see him come back only to hand the reins off.
I know what you mean.
To be like on kind of a support role.
To come in one last time and then for some reason, like training the new guy or not be able to do the mission or, you know, in a very proud way. So I wouldn't like that someone comes in and upstages him and he's old news and he's washed out kind of thing. I would like if they did it in a very tasteful way, you know.
Yeah, like the game kind of franchise goes a bit weird. It goes weird for after Chaos Theory. So like Double Agent, it was an interesting premise. So in Double Agent, did you play Double Agent?
Double Agent is that you're framed for something and you have to go like roles basically, isn't it?
No, so you're still working for the NSA and you're basically you're being planted as kind of, as a rogue, when you're being planted as a rogue agent. Mm-hmm. So you're infiltrating John Brown's army, so the JBA, and you're in prison and you get recruited by, you get a contact in there and he basically brings you into the fold. So as you're kind of, you're navigating the JBA compound, so they're kind of base, mm-hmm. and you're doing tasks for the NSA then, so do you have kind of a trust meter, and just by doing certain tasks for the JBA, you're obviously kind of, your trust is going increasing with them, but it decreases with the NSA and vice versa. Okay, so there's a bit of a balancing act. Now, it's actually quite good. It's an interesting pace, but you don't have like, a lot of the UI has been stripped back. A lot of games were kind of doing it then.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Instead of having all the information on screen, you just had a little kind of a light on your back that
goes from
changed
blue to
color.
Green, right?
It changed. Yeah, no, does it go blue? No, I think it just goes red and green.
Oh, red and green. Okay.
Red, or green, maybe blue. Maybe. I'd have to play it again.
I don't know. I have blue in my head for some reason. But yeah, I know
they
what you mean.
They did keep
like
in Blacklist as well.
Kind of like in Dead Space with the health meter on his back and stuff like this.
That's exactly why, yeah. So games started stripping back the UI. So it worked really well in Dead Space. In Splinter Cell, like in the Double Agent, it was good. Like I did enjoy it. But there's actually two versions of the game. So they released the game on it was on the 360, I believe, but they re-released it on the Xbox, and the Xbox OG Xbox version is different and it's better.
Really? So there was a cross release Xbox 360. I thought you were going to say the other way around, 360 and then released on the Xbox One.
The story is actually better. The story is different. There's a different outcome.
Okay. So it's basically a different game just with the same name and premise and everything.
Slightly, I think a different developer as well. I think Montreal actually came back. I think it was developed by someone else again. Montreal came back and done Double Agent. Double Agent is good. It's worth a go. I remember there's I think I'm almost certain it's in Double Agent, but you're on a cruise ship and you're kind of navigating a ship in one mission. I think it was kind of one of the more standout missions for me in there. The Conviction was a weird one though. Conviction, because like I said, they're kind of introducing new elements, and Conviction kind of, you're led to believe your daughter's been murdered and you basically go, it's not to say rogue, but you go AWOL and you're trying to hunt down whoever is responsible, but you've no gadgets. The NSA have nothing to do with you anymore. And you now have this kind of a thing called mark and execute. So if you take out someone stealthily, and you can basically mark other enemies and you basically instantly take them out.
Ah, yes, I remember this. And yeah, so like, let's say you mark two enemies and then you approach one, kill them, and then you'll automatically move to the next and move to the next kind of thing.
Yeah, like and it's dependent on your gun that you've equipped too, because certain guns have more pips. So if you're co-oping with someone, you can have max four that you can take out. So if you co-op with someone, you can take out max eight. So you can basically clear a room, which is really satisfying. But it's really kind of forced combat as opposed to, like, there's still stealth, but they're really kind of trying to push you towards kind of go loud and take no prisoners.
Bit down the James Bond route rather than the Metal Gear Solid route, in a way.
Yeah, like they implemented kind of like, I remember if you go into, like, you go into interrogate someone. So you go into a guy, he's in the bathroom, and you know, you're trying to interrogate him for information. So normally he just kind of keep him, you know, his arm around his throat or a knife to his neck, and he gets the information. This, he beats the crap out of him. Like, you go over by the sink and he smashes him through the sink, and it's
It's a
real
bit
aggressive.
out of character like this. You know, you're trying to be stealthy and then you're like smashing sinks and throwing
Yeah.
mirrors.
And because you don't have your gadgets, like, instead of having an optic cable that you see under doors, he's now got like a broken piece of glass or a mirror, and he's using that
Oh,
then, you know.
okay.
So there's kind of, and I don't even know if you get night vision anymore. I think you just kind of start to see better in the dark
Eating your
when
greens
you're,
and carrots.
it goes kind of noir as you're kind of
Yeah, I get
navigating
what you
around.
mean. It's kind of like a mutant ability rather than a gadget, in a
And
way.
the only thing that I kind of remember really well is the fact that when you're going into new areas, you get this kind of slight intro to the new zone, and it just poof, comes up in this white print. That's kind of actually, it's such a cool, like, you'd see the kind of writing coming across buildings, kind of like a projection.
This I
And
like.
it's actually, it's really cool.
This is very like Prey with Arkane Studios, where you know you have the
Yeah.
helicopter tour at the start and like the developer name is on the bridge and stuff like this as
Yeah.
you're flying past. Yeah, I do like that. I like when it's part of the world. But tell me, right, before we move on to listener submissions and stories, right? How would you rank all six Splinter Cell games? So we have Splinter Cell, the original, Stealth Action Redefined as like the subtitle for it. We have Pandora Tomorrow, Chaos Theory, Double Agent, Conviction, and Blacklist. I think that's all of them, right?
Like, best to worst.
Yeah, best to worst. What's your ranking like? Which is the least favorite? Let's start with the least and move to the best.
Least probably Pandora Tomorrow, only because I think the only thing that saved it was the multiplayer. And I don't think, I don't remember. I remember, like, the AI wasn't as good. I can remember, like, there's a scene you're going through. It's like a meat processing plant, and it's kind of smoky or like foggy in there because you've the, you know, what would you call it? The cold.
Yeah,
So it kind of, it obscures your vision. But
the cold steam.
in yeah, cold steam. In certain areas, you're not being seen because that's there. It's kind of like a smoke screen. Yes, you know, NPCs suddenly start to pick up on you, or you have kind of like those kind of plastic kind of curtains. You know, they're semi
That's one
transparent.
thing I actually forgot to touch on is going back even to Splinter Cell 1, the interaction with the fabric is phenomenal. Like, I don't know if you remember, but very early on, there's like a sheet of fabric hanging down, and it looks like a wall. And then you walk into it, and it just bends and folds around you. And that
So good
blew my
physics, yeah.
mind back in the day. Like, yeah, the physics engine for like the fabric is phenomenal. And it was
Like, the
that
lighting
combined
is
with the
just so
lighting is
good.
just, yeah, it's
Yeah.
so good. Yeah.
And you
There's
see the
even one
shafts of
part.
light.
Yeah, the shafts of light. I was just going to say, when you have one part, there's like a turbine spinning and there's a light behind it. And you can literally see the
Yeah.
shafts of light turning like around and around. And it's just like, wow, you know,
They've
how
done it
they did
really
that
well. I
so
remember,
early.
like, as well, on keypads as well, something like, I just think they were kind of groundbreaking. Like, even for the first game, and being able
I know what
to
you're going to
use
say.
thermal imaging with the fingerprints on the
Yeah.
keypads,
Yeah. You could
you
literally
know.
go up and you could see. Could you see? I don't remember
You
this,
could see the
right?
buttons.
You could see the buttons that were touched by the heat, right? So, like, if he came up and he pressed 1, 2, 3, 4, you would see 1, 2, 3, 4. But would they be intense and less intense based on which one he pushed
Yeah, less
first?
intense would be the
Yeah,
least intense would be the first button pressed.
yes. Sure.
Yeah,
Yeah,
so you
I
do
remember
it in
that.
reverse. And even the
Yeah, that was
hacking
cool.
is probably some of the best in still in current gaming, like when you kind of hack computers or cameras or anything. So you have this kind of little pad that comes out, and you have to lock the numbers in sequence, and it kind of whittles down.
Yes, I remember this now. Yes. No, that's
and
quite that, cool.
That's still really good. So yeah, so my least favorite would be Pandora Tomorrow. And then Conviction, because it's just like, it wasn't bad. I did enjoy it, but
it's just a step away from
a game
the
in
genre.
Its own right.
Yeah. I feel like with Conviction, it went a little bit the way of like Assassin's Creed, where, you know, we talked about this on the Discord, that like Assassin's Creed, when they got to the likes of Origins and Valhalla, they should have just been standalone games. And
standalone.
There's like Conviction for me, like I haven't played it, but what I've seen of it, it feels very much like an action spy game crammed into a stealth genre spy game, you know, which is kind of,
yeah.
It would have been better just as maybe like as a spin-off game, like a Splinter Cell story. Conviction, you know, would have been good. But yeah, anyway. So go ahead, next one.
Conviction, I'd say next, and then Double Agent.
Mm-hmm.
Double Agent only because, again, it's something that's, it kind of doesn't go par in course, like, as in it's not Splinter Cell, it's just, it's a different take on the genre.
Yeah.
So then Blacklist, then the first one, Splinter Cell 1, and then Chaos Theory being the best.
Yeah. I would say like my ranking for the first three, so I'm not going to rank Double Agent, Conviction, and Blacklist. Blacklist, I haven't played at all. Conviction, I've watched people play. Double Agent, I played a little bit when my friend got it, but didn't have it myself. But from the first three, I would agree with you. Like Pandora is the lowest, then probably the first Splinter Cell, just for the nostalgia maybe. And then, because I know Pandora Tomorrow is technically like Splinter Cell 1, but improved. But I still wouldn't rank it as high, just for the nostalgia, I guess. But Chaos Theory for me, like I remember spending hours and hours. And I remember at one part, now I haven't played it recently and I don't remember the story, but I remember at one part you burst into like a room and there's some big twist happened. And I just remember my mind being fucking blown at the time. And so the story was obviously good, but now I would have to replay it and I wouldn't know the twist was coming probably. But even just looking at the covers, it's funny how you describe the games, because I'm looking at the covers here now and you ranked like Conviction and Double Agent the lowest and Pandora Tomorrow. But you ranked Double Agent and Conviction lower because they're not really fitting with the genre, let's say, of Splinter Cell. And if you look at the covers, like the other four games all have like him in full stealth gear with the tri-goggles, you know, the green goggles. And Splinter Cell Conviction, he's just wearing like civilian clothes, holding someone to the floor with the gun in his hand. And in Double Agent, he's walking away from a building that's exploding. And it's like, and he's in normal clothes again, you know, and it's like, yeah, they look like two completely different games, only for the fact that Splinter Cell is splashed onto them, you know. With that said, shall we move into the listener submissions?
All right, you take it there, Sogar.
I'll take it. Okay, so I'll take the first one. You may end up with the weird usernames again, but we'll see. So the first one is from TK Instinct. And they said, I remember getting the demo disc for my PS2 and playing that level. I thought it was the coolest thing ever, and it forever ingrained the appeal of stealth action into my brain. I still think about that, and I have nostalgia-filled memories about those days. Things were so much more carefree back then, I miss it.
And I agree. Like, I think, you know, it kind of really sparked that kind of genre in me, because I don't think I would have played Splinter Cell way before. I don't think Metal Gear Solid was out. I didn't have it then.
You know what? I played Metal Gear Solid, and I would say, like, Metal Gear Solid is a stealth game, right? But if you take that back to, like, the start, right? In Splinter Cell, everything is stealth, more or less, right? Okay. In Metal Gear Solid, you have like a little bit of stealth, but then at some point you're running and gunning up a stair tower for 15 minutes. Then you're fighting a giant helicopter. Then you're, you know, yeah, the sniper missions are a little bit stealthier, but like you can see them and they can see you the whole time. It's not very sneaky. Like, I think they could have done a lot more with sneaking around with the sniper battles and stuff. And you're fighting a tank. You're fighting a guy with a Gatling gun. And yes, to a certain extent, you're sneaking around them and stuff. But like, comparing it to the first Splinter Cell, the stealth was just next level. You know, that like Splinter Cell was a fully stealth dedicated game. And it's funny because like they're kind of titled weird. So tactical espionage is Metal Gear Solid, and then action stealth is the Splinter Cell subtitle. But I would probably like swap it.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
It's like more like Splinter Cell stealth than action espionage.
Yeah, like Splinter Cell, you're going, you can go start to finish. Like I'd compare Splinter Cell to Hitman. They're both games that you can basically start the game and get to the end without, you know, killing anyone, without taking anyone out.
You can do a ghost run, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
So the next one.
All right. So the next submission is from Assassin217. It's seen the first trailer and the screenshots in gaming magazines of Sam Fisher repelling, doing the split, or I meant to say split jump.
I think that
he said
be.
Splint. The split jump and crouching in vents are my fondest memories of the first game. After that, I knew I had to play the game. The power plant level is one that always stood out to me, and I remember the most due to the winter setting and feeling of the isolation. That was around the time when I was transitioning to becoming an adult and begin to pay attention to stealth genre of games.
It's kind of weird how transitioning to being an adult and kind of coming away from the sweatiness of games and chasing more of this kind of tactical side is quite evident in a lot of people, I would say. Like, I would be the same. I would favor games where I can really take my time and, you know, set things up nicely and sneak around rather than like fast twitch reactions, if that makes sense.
I love games that you have to, that you can take the stealthier approach. The same, like if I'm playing shooters, I'm always playing snipers, you know, be, you know, hunker back, set everything up, take your time.
For better or for worse.
For better or for worse. But stealth genre is just like, they are kind of those games. I think there is certainly quite a few of them out there, but I still think it's an extremely underrepresented gaming genre. Yeah. I think games might part have a slight stealth element, but like I think Splinter Cell, like you said, is a true stealth game, and I think there should be more of them.
And this makes me curious now about the power plant level, because I'm a sucker for a winter level. So like at Christmas, I love playing winter style games and winter levels. And the power plant would have been the PS2 exclusive, so I haven't played this.
I think you just have to look up a Let's Play. No, yeah.
No, I might emulate the PS2 version and then just download a save file with all the levels and then just play the nuclear level, maybe. So the next one from Poet3991. I remember a moment when I was young playing the Abattoir level, pulling out the F2 and lining up a shot on one of the soldiers for a headshot. Then I had this moment of realization, I guess you would call it. This guy had a mother and father, maybe a wife and kids, and I was about to end his life because he was in the way. I sat there for what felt like an eternity, but likely was a minute or two. Knowing I had killed a lot of people in the game up to that point, I questioned the morality of war, death, peace, and just cause. I was like 10 to 15, so this was a lot for my small, innocent mind. Then another soldier walked up next to the first soldier. I was having an existential crisis about shooting, who had the same model, weapon, and face, which kind of unexpectedly ended the crisis. So obviously because they were just kind of all the same then. But no, that's true. Like, it gets you thinking about like the morality of stuff. And like, there's something I really want to talk about in terms of morality, and it's to do with the new game, Clair Obscur. But we can't talk about it yet because you haven't finished it.
I haven't finished it.
So it's like...
Oh, now you're kind of hinting.
It really gets you thinking about like death and like grieving and peace and war and stuff and what it all means. And like, yeah, it's kind of like a lot of these games, you know, I was watching James Bond as well yesterday, right? The Quantum of Solace. So like, I've been working through the James Bond movies and we're up to like Pierce Brosnan and now we're on to Daniel Craig and...
Daniel Craig.
Not Dave, Craig David.
And, spray to God, yeah, right?
Casino Royale is really good, right? I would say that's like really good. And I still remember it. What's so weird, right? When I got my, I just had a flashback of this. When I got my PS3, I remember when the PS3 launched, Blu-rays were just on the scene, right? And the PS3 was like the first Blu-ray player. And I don't know, did the early Xbox 360 play Blu-rays? I don't think it did. I think the Elite played Blu-rays, maybe.
I don't remember, to be honest.
I don't remember. But I think the original didn't. So Sony had this Blu-ray player over Xbox at the time. And I remember like I signed up for like the PSN network. And next thing, like this thing arrived in the post and it was from PlayStation and it was a DVD of Casino Royale or Blu-ray of Casino Royale. And I just thought this was bizarre. Like just from creating a PSN account or something, they sent me like a Blu-ray and I was like, That just always strikes me as so weird, you know. I think my brother still has the Blu-ray or something like this.
You don't get anything for free. Oh, they actually. Oh, yeah, sure. They'd have to send you a physical copy. Yeah.
Yeah, they actually literally sent me a physical copy of the Blu-ray, which was just mad. Like, I was that's
class.
Insane. Obviously, to kind of push Blu-ray in the sales and stuff, but I just thought that was crazy at the time because, like, you know, you're a kid and like the buying the PS3 itself was a lot, and Blu-rays were like 40 quid, 30 quid, something like that. So it was like, I just thought it was so cool. But anyway, I was watching the second movie with Daniel Craig, which is Quantum of Solace, and the editing is terrible, by the way. The editing is the worst I've seen in any movie. First of all, they have this like art direction choice, which is like this oversaturation of everything or overexposure. Mm. So like in the desert, anything that's white is like super washed out and glary. And like if you have waves in the water, they're just solid white, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just not nice, especially if you're watching it at night in the dark. It's like really glaring 1 minute, and then you go into like an office and it's normal. So I don't like
that's
that.
That's weird.
But the editing is also like super jarring. It's like there would be a fight scene and you have like literally at some points you have like 0.5 of a second of a frame, and then it's moving to the next one, the next one, the next one. You're like, what the fuck is happening? Like, it's just, and you're like, what the fuck is going on, right? But what it did get me thinking about was like, they're obviously killing a lot of people, you know? And it got me thinking that like Daniel Craig is showing up to places and he's not very like Pierce Brosnan's Bond, where he's like a slick talker and, you know, gets himself into this funny situation. He just basically goes in, sees the person that he's supposed to be like following or tailing, and just proceeds to kill them. Like in stone cold blood, basically. And it just got me thinking about like all the dying and death. And I'm like, you watch these movies and you think like you're the hero, you know, but in reality, there's a very like blurred line between good and evil and right and wrong. And
you got to do it for the mission, Gar.
Yeah, I know. But you know, in these games, you think you're the hero. And it's like, well, if like you're talking about this game where you're at like the Chinese embassy and you're playing from the American side, and I'm like, are people in China playing this and thinking they're playing the villain?
Yeah. Yeah,
like
true.
If it was the Irish embassy, I'd be like, what the fuck?
There's actually, sorry, you know, like, just to bring it back to chaos theory, there's one thing, like, I'm in an awful habit of like trying to do, you know, not to kill anyone, to be extremely stealthy, either go undetected, but I accidentally kept hitting right trigger, so I was stabbing people. It's like, no, I meant to knock you out. I constantly happen to reload saves. It's like,
I'm just thinking of you walking around with like a blade and like a nervous twitcher, like, hello, yeah. Stab.
Just stab. It's like, no, he's dying. He's bleeding out. No, he's sleeping. Go to sleep.
So yeah, you want to take the next one?
Oh, so the next one is from EDPZ. I didn't play it on release. I played it a few years later, and by pure coincidence, I beat the game on the date it actually takes place in-game. My mind was blown.
What?
Seeing the date on the final message screen matching the real-world date was simply insane to a 10-year-old. Which is crazy, because like the first, yeah, I think like the game is it
2 years, I think.
2004 or 2006, I think, is the conclusion.
I think starts in 2004 and then proceeds to, 2006 or something like this. That's pretty crazy.
It's weird when you do see games and you're thinking, like, this is supposed to be the future, like 2020. And
yeah,
you're like,
it was like, well, it was very near future in that case. But it's funny watching, like, stuff like Blade Runner now and stuff where it's like, you know, the year 2035 and it's like 7 years away.
Yeah. Where's my flying car?
The next one is from, I'm not even going to try and pronounce this username, but basically it's the whole top row of a keyboard. So it's like QWERTY-UIKOLP. QWERTY-UIKOLP. So I'm going to skip that. But the comment is, I remember playing the GBA version on my brother's GBA in 2010 when I was 3 to 4 years old. And forgot about the game for 10 or 11 years and played all of them in 2022 after I remembered some Trigoggle spy game on my old GBA. That just triggered a really weird memory for me. Now, I haven't played the GBA version, but I would say like the GBA games are very reminiscent of like the early mobile games. And I remember having the Splinter Cell mobile game after Chaos Theory came out. And it was like, it was actually pretty good. It was like, it played kind of like an old Sega game, So you would have like your buttons to do stuff, as I remember. So you moved with like the keypad. This was when phones had buttons for everyone who's not that old. So phones had a physical 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And basically you had like 5 was your action button, and then 4, 6, 2, and 8 moved you around. And then as I remember, like 7, 8, 1, and 3, so like the diagonal buttons did like certain commands, like, you know, take out an enemy or stab them or shoot them or something like this. And I remember playing that mobile game, which is weird. So I actually have a copy of Kane and Lynch on the 360, right? Which would have been, I guess, not far off the time that that Splinter Cell was coming out, Chaos Theory. And there is actually, so I'll just grab it. There is actually an ad for the Kane and Lynch mobile game. I don't know how well you can see that. But
with a lovely button phone.
Yeah, button phone covered in blood. But that's just wild. That, like, I completely forgot how big phones were. And like, even we had like gaming shows, which, you know, were kind of like the modern day Game Master show. And I think one was called Games World. I don't know if you remember this, with the two English guys that did this.
No.
Or Games World, I think it was called. And I must send you a video. This is so funny. It's like they're
probably talked, really cringy.
It's so good. They basically, we might do like a reaction series to it. We'll see. They basically go through, like, you know, section by section, like, oh, what are you playing? What's the new game coming up? And there was one girl who was in charge of like mobile games. And they would always say like the same thing about the mobile game. Like, this is just great if you're like waiting for the bus for a few minutes, you know, every time it was like, this game would be great if you were just waiting for the bus.
It's like you're waiting for a lot of buses.
And they, I can't believe you don't remember this. Maybe you didn't even see it, but they had this section where it was like the feud section, you know, where two friends would come on and they would do like three rounds against each other in some game.
Mm.
And it would be like, what's the reason for the feud today? And they'd be like, yeah, he's always saying like that he's better than me. And I just want to show everyone like I'm better than him at the game. It's like, all right, fine. And they would do like 3 rounds. And then if you won all 3, it was called like a whitewash. And man, you need to watch that again. There's so many games on that as well that like were in early development and never got released and stuff around the show, which is pretty cool.
To have a look back, actually, just to see what actually was in development that never came out. You're like, oh God, I remember that.
We should throw out an episode and watch it sometime. It's a good watch. But anyway, the next one is all you. This is a long one. Do you want me to take the longest?
Go for it, yeah.
All right. So it's almost summer. This is from Alex Christian, by the way. So it's almost summer 2003. I'm almost 11 years old. And I'd been reading about this game in Nintendo Power and got super hyped to buy it with my saved up money. My parents, especially my mom, were hesitant of me buying/playing violent games at the time. And mom gave me a hard time on this game, despite being T-rated, mainly due to the human shield ability you could use, so where you could grab someone and just like shoot past them. It took weeks of convincing her that I solemnly wouldn't use people as shields, and she finally caved in and let me buy the game. Not only was it a blast to play, but it felt like my first adult game and a victory over my strict mom. I'd usually wake up early on summer weekdays when they were both at work to play carefree without their watchful eyes. What blows my mind in retrospect was how I played that campaign dozens of times and was perfectly happy with it. This was on GameCube in 2003, so no internet whatsoever, and it charms me on how so many people like me were content with endlessly replaying campaigns, and most importantly, not needing anything else within the game to make it feel like a complete experience. All games in adjacent genres now seen obligated to have a campaign, non-campaign, PvE, terrorist, hunt, horde, etc., and multiplayer to be considered a full experience when gaming for so many decades was just playing a singular mode. Obviously, it doesn't apply to all games, but I think you know where I'm coming from. I think we should get Alex on the podcast to do an episode.
That was
beautifully written. A lot of things in there I want to touch on, like the Nintendo Power magazines and reading about the magazines that we just talked about, you know, reading about the new games and stuff was so cool. And obviously, like the parents buying games, I had this with like GTA as well. Like my parents would give me a lot of stick if I was trying to buy like Vice City or San Andreas, and I'd be like, no, it's fine. And the guy, we go to like GameStop then, our local shop, you know. And we go up, I think at the time it was called GameStation, and we go up to the counter, and I think I was trying to buy like Killzone. And the guy was like, you know, I was with my mom and she was like, is this not a bit violent now, like Killzone? And I was like, no, it's not. It's not as bad as it sounds. We got up to the counter and the guy was like, sighed. And he was like, right. And like looked at my mom and he was like, this game is very violent. Right. And she was like, right. And eventually she let me get it. And then he just turned to me and like sighed. And he was like, right. This game is very frustrating. You have to save like every 5 seconds in this game. And I was like, don't care. Want it. And then I got home and it was so difficult and I had to save so much I never played it. So listen to the guys in the shop. They know what they're talking about.
I can just imagine you kind of like getting the game or going up to the counter and your man, your mom like, oh, is this game violent? And you're behind her kind of like, you know, cut the neck. No. It's not violent. No.
Stop. But yeah, also like that he played it on the GameCube. The GameCube was so ahead of its time, I think. Like that was graphically amazing at the time it came out. And like, I don't know about you, but in my circle of friends and like school friends and stuff, almost nobody had a GameCube that I can remember.
I don't know anyone who had one.
No, people had the N64. And the only reason we had one was like I had the PS2, but my brother bought a GameCube. And like every time I was sick, I remember playing the shit out of the GameCube. Like Super Mario Sunshine, we had like Rogue Leader, the Star Wars game, Rogue Squadron. And that was like living the movies, basically. And man, it was just so good. Star Fox Adventures, Metroid Prime. Like, there was, with Nintendo as well, like we talked about this recently, they're like one of the only companies that's still like such a powerhouse for console exclusives, you know? You had like every game I named out there, you couldn't play on anything other than the Nintendo GameCube, you know? Which is wild.
And it's still like, it still goes so on. I suppose you could pick one up fairly cheap. Well, you probably wouldn't actually be cheap these days.
I think here in Austria, it's about 100 quid for one. You might like pay 150 and get one with a lot of games, maybe. You can emulate the games and it's pretty decent now. But the only thing is, like, if you're emulating the GameCube, order yourself a GameCube controller for the PC. Because for certain games, if you use like an Xbox One, they had kind of like a gas trigger kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So like the trigger was on like a light spring and then there was a click at the end, right? I don't know what you'd call it, but I just call it gas power. And in Super Mario Sunshine, you basically would have like different things happening depending on like holding the trigger lightly and then snapping down fully. So like going to some games with an Xbox controller, they don't work that well because they all took this into account that the GameCube controller had this gas spring trigger and it's like almost like a double command from one button. And there's no way to really map this. So I would say, like, if you're emulating, buy a GameCube controller for the PC. That would be my 2 cents. So thank you for the very well-written and nostalgic submission, Alex. The next one and final one, I believe, is... No, the next one. Sorry, we have one more after this. The next one is from Jinx1010. A friend of mine had the game on Xbox. I watched him playing a lot. When the game was finally released for PC, I went directly from school to the shop to get it. Side note, I was 14 back then, but this one electronics store sold us all the games, like GTA 3, without checking for age restrictions. And that was very rare back in the day because, like, you, in, like, GameStop by me, forget it. You couldn't even rent a game without, like, ID, basically.
We'd GameStop at Mahon Point, and that never checked anything.
Yeah, but that was, like, lawless back then.
Look where the shop was, yeah.
I was so hooked playing the game all Friday afternoon, I totally forgot my little everyday student job. The old lady phoned me on my mother's landline and asked if I would still come around to walk her dog. I didn't. I made up some excuse to continue the police station mission. I still got the game with the original receipt, and he actually attached a screenshot of the receipt, which appears to be in German, and he paid $47.49 for the game. So games were cheaper back then. Contrary to popular belief.
Mad.
Yeah, that's pretty
wild. How does he still have the receipt?
It's literally dated the 28th of the 2nd, 2003. I want to see. Wait, no. Release date. Splinter. We're going to fact check this.
So it came out in, did it come out in 2003 or 2002?
We got to check the Germany release date, I think. It depends which version you got. So he got it on the 28th of the 2nd. So he got the, which year? 2003. So I believe the Xbox version came out first, and then the PlayStation and GameCube version is one of the ones he would have got, I think. It doesn't say on the receipt. But that's very
mad. Cool. I'm still shocked he still has the receipt for it.
He still has the receipt. That's crazy. I do have one game that has the receipt in it, but I didn't. It's not my receipt. So like, it's just in the game when I got it, and it's the original. But it's like faded and almost can't see it, and his one is perfect. I don't know how. So yeah, that's the story from Jinx. Very cool. The next one is from Terperwerp 92. He says, or she says, I have few very specific memories of messing with the AI in certain places. I would always shoot the window of Nicolas's office, or Nicol. How do you say this? I can't remember. Nicolas.
I said Nicolas.
Nicolas. Is it not Nicolas's? Yeah. No. Nicolas. Nicolas? Nicolas?
Nicolas is what I'd say. But...
I would always shoot the window of the villain's office.
The villain number one.
in defense ministry in such a way that it would break the light, but only pierce the window. When I would be able to shoot it again, break in and wait. Then I would be able to shoot it again, break in and hide from the guard. Then I would be able to grab him and then walk him out the window. He'll fall to the ground and survive and immediately start shooting, but he'll be trapped down there. So this was like, I believe you couldn't go outside until later in the level in this part. So the NPC could obviously survive down there. I think if you did, you glitched out or something like this. I'd also tried to grab Grinkle in the abattoir fight, which you can do by battling him, by baiting him to move to a position where you can airfoil him. What was airfoiling in the game?
It's kind of like a beanbag, you know, it's like a little ring.
Yes, sorry. Kind of like airsoft, I guess, but beanbags. Not much you can do after that, but I like the idea of showing him off to the prisoners. I also found out on a recent playthrough that you can actually ricochet airfoil rounds and bounce them off walls. Not even just at wide angles, just straight up bounce them nearly 1 inch degrees off a wall. Very useful for hitting enemies around corners. I can imagine you firing it and hitting yourself, Jamie, for some reason.
Oh, thanks.
Just in your tendencies. No, that was very cool. Some very nostalgic memories there. I wasn't sure like how nostalgic it was going to be compared to Metal Gear Solid, because that's such a major one and that's a bit earlier, but no, it was pretty good. I'm pretty happy with that. So yeah, I think to sum up, Jamie, we'll sum up with a final question, because we're nearly like an hour and a half in already. So tell me, if someone was to come back now, having not played Splinter Cell ever, and they were to come back to the genre and they were to jump in.
Chaos Theory.
And that's it for this week's episode.
And that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening.
I do have one follow-up question, right? Which is, if they were to come back and play Chaos Theory, right? I would also recommend the same. But if they were to come back and play Chaos Theory, would you recommend on PC? Would you recommend emulating it, or would you recommend on Xbox?
Xbox, because the save feature, you can save in Chaos Theory.
Ah, okay. So it doesn't make a difference, really.
No.
So on console, or I guess PC if you need to, but probably emulate it so that you have the controller if you're on PC, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes it easier.
No, for sure. Like the keyboards isn't bad to play. It actually feels quite nice. It's just better with controller. Mm-hmm. You have that kind of when you're kind of really sneaking and you're only kind of feathering the joystick up slightly.
Yeah.
You know, to really crawl or to really sneak. Like in the animations, actually, they have a different animation sequence from the first, second, and third. So first and second are the same. So it's an actual animation. So if you were to kind of like, you know, just barely push up on the joystick, he'll go into like, he'll start the animation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you stop. So if you were to do it, spam it every now and again, he'll actually, he'll look like he's glitching his movement. Where on Chaos Theory, if you just like slightly push the controller up, he'll actually like he'll step forward, and unless you if you were to push let go, he'll stay like that, and then if you push it again, he'll move further. So it's a real sneaky feeling.
Yeah, that is quite cool.
It's frame by frame.
Yeah. And he kind of stays in the position until you move further.
Yeah, and the same even if you were to roll backwards, it'll roll back through those frames. So it's as you expect sneaking to look.
Cool. Oh, very cool. So I think for this episode, we'll leave it there, and we will catch everyone in the next episode. Thanks for listening, and bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Bye.